Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Welcome to Ask OTC, the show where we answer all of your questions from the week in European football. I'm Dotun Adebayo.
I'm Andy Brassel.
And I'm Jonathan Johnson.
This one straight away from Gabriel. A lot of the major nations seem to struggle during this international break. Spain, England, France, Portugal all lost at least one game, for example. Why do you think that is? And does it actually tell us anything ahead of the Euros? You fancy going for that first, Andy?
I think we talked about that idea of work in progress during the main show yesterday. And that's seen as something that puts the fear of God into most people because we are so close to the Euros. But when else do you have to work things out? I think we saw that with team changes. Also, I think it's a legacy of where we are in the season. So this international window is a really real juxtaposition in that it's vital for the international coaches so they can have the last look at their teams and the players. Not just the players who they will pick, but the players who they might pick for the Euros. And on the other hand, the players' perspective, which is they're probably 45 games into a 60-game season, and it's just feeling a bit tired. And their minds are on, their minds are not on the international game yet. Their minds are still on the club game. And for a lot of those players, for the prizes that they've still got to play for, so not just actually winning trophies, but European qualification as well. So, I mean, we said how Julian Nagelsmann wanted a different thing out of these international games than most of the coaches, because he could really do with winning those games. Whereas for the rest of them, it would be nice to win. But for the contenders, I don't know about you guys, but because Portugal lost in Slovenia, do I think they've got any less of a chance at the Euros? No. Because France lost at home to Germany, do I think that they're any less favourites for the Euros? No. Same with England losing to Brazil. I think all of those things are not that important. But the timing is particular, because it's funny, all the naysayers for the international game, they will have said more than most that this is the international break that no one wants. But by the same token, they can't deny the importance of it. So there's that real clash of what one party needs and what the other party, the players, need.
Yeah, and just adding to that, because I agree largely with what Andy said there, I think there's something extra to factor in with France as well. Like, for France, normally an international break will be Paris-based. They'd be able to play at Stade de France, but because of this being 2024 and having the Olympics coming up in a couple of months' time, those games had to be outsourced to other venues in the country. That's why you saw France playing Germany in Lyon and then playing Chile in Marseille. So I think that adds an extra travel element for those players as well. And, you know, like Andy said, you know, they're already tired enough. It was kind of a welcome break from, what's been a very demanding start to 2024 at club level. Yet suddenly there's the added complication for the French that they, you know, start in Clairefontaine, have a couple of days there, then go to Lyon, then go to Marseille, then they're back to their clubs and immediately thrown back into the thick of it. So it's not quite as relaxing perhaps as a normal international break with non-competitive fixtures would have been.
I guess the other half of this, though, to go back to Gabriel's question, is just consistency more elusive in the modern game? I mean, I think it is. But is it elusive to the point where it's going to affect the result of major international tournaments? I mean, if we go back, and it's something we spoke about on the Ramble this week as well, the idea that for all the criticism of Gareth Southgate's apparent conservatism, and the same to an extent for Didier Deschamps, the way that you generally win international tournaments is by playing within yourself a little bit, by playing quite a conservative game. And that's an energy-saving thing, isn't it? Now, to an extent, you can take the last World Cup out of that, because that was halfway through the European season. So for that reason, I think we saw the best World Cup that we'd seen in a very long time. But ultimately, you find a situation where players are knackered. They've played 60 games. So you can't hope to play high-octane football and get decent results. I wonder if you have the mount up of increasing physical load of the game, the fact that the players are playing more matches than ever, and with the expanded Club World Cup, with the expanded Champions League, that's not going to get any better, certainly in the medium term. I guess the question is, JJ, does this mean in a cup competition, there's a higher chance of not the best team winning it when we actually get to the real thing, when we get to the Euros?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it adds a huge sort of jeopardy factor and almost kind of randomizes the fact that you are probably going to have at least one, if not, more sort of big names that come into the tournament as favorites who end up, you know, suffering really underwhelming competitions and, you know, dropping out much earlier than expected. I mean, we've already seen that at some recent international competitions. And like Andy said, the scheduling is only getting far more difficult. You just listen to what the likes of Kylian Mbappe have said on it, earlier this year in an interview with GQ that he did, where he basically alluded to the fact that football schedules now are more like basketball schedules, where, you know, teams and management are going to have to, you know, start sort of load managing and learning that concept, because there's just so much sport to be played. Obviously, Mbappe himself sees himself as an exception to that and thrives on every single minute of every single game, like 2 to 3 days. But the point stands, I think. And, you know, just looking at France's summer coming up, it's not just the Euros. I think that's what many people sort of underestimate. You know, for these players who really are very determined to take part, it's going to be the Euro, it's going to be the Olympics, and then straight back into club action as well. So, you know, it is a huge, huge amount that places a massive toll physically and mentally on the players. And naturally, there are going to be teams that sort of either crack under the pressure or, you know, the unexpected, you know, injuries that crop up and derail a team's chances of winning the biggest titles. And that applies as much in the club game as it does at international level, despite the question obviously being about the Euros.
On that note, this from Dan, can we get an early prediction for surprise package at the Euros? Do you fancy going with that first, JJ?
Sure. I did make the mistake of going for Turkey at the last Euros, which was absolutely disastrous. So I'm very wary
confess
of giving
your
any
sins.
Team sort of the...
Confess your sins.
Exactly. So I'm very wary of sort of going too early. I do think, though, that Germany are going to be surprisingly strong. I've got this feeling since the return of Kosten, it's not just based on sort of the two victories over France. I do think that, because many people, based on their form, would have written them off. You normally have to factor in a bit of a sort of host nation bounce. I think that Germany are going to be surprisingly good at the Euros. I'm not saying they're going to go all the way, and I think that they qualify as a surprise package given their struggles in recent years.
Andy?
I think Dan's done very well to frame this as surprise package rather than dark horse, because obviously after previous errors, as JJ might have alluded to, I can't actually say dark horse out loud anymore. I think there are three teams I would like to underline here. Firstly, Hungary, vastly improved over the last couple of years, and I think we'll get a big Dominic Sobic light in this tournament. I think Denmark are worth underlining. And of course, look, they got to the semis of the last Euros. Fell short of the World Cup, but they fell short mainly at the World Cup, not because they played terribly, but because they weren't able to put the ball in the back of the net. And now they have Rasmus Højlund, which I think is exactly the player that they needed at the right time. And, you know, international football, it's kind of luck of the draw, because you can't go out and buy the players you need to fix your problems. You just have to wait for them to emerge and develop. And that's been a happy little accident for Denmark. The other one I would say, actually, is Ukraine, because they have a lot of talent in that squad. You know, I think you can look at Sudakov, who played very well in the two playoff games. Mudryk has had a season where he's quietly improved. Yaremchuk is actually playing and scoring for Valencia now, and Artem Dovbik and Sigankov are having great seasons at Girona. And they've even got a situation where there's a genuine battle between two top-level goalkeepers for the starting place there, between Lunin, who will probably start because he's been great for Real Madrid this season, and Anatoly Trubin at Benfica. And then you look at the group they've been drawn into with Romania, Slovakia and Belgium. Now, I've said on the Ramble this week that I think Belgium are a little bit better than people give them credit for. But you look at that, and Ukraine aren't in an impossible group. That they should be able to at least challenge to get out of that group. So that could be interesting.
It helps, doesn't it, when your president comes out and applauds your victory and reminds you as a player that you're not just playing for the shirt, you're playing for the entire nation. It's got to help.
No pressure, no pressure.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously,
man. Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we'll weigh around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
And this question from Nathan. JJ, what does the future of Ligue 1 look like post Kylian Mbappe?
Well, a lot different than it looks with Kylian Mbappe at present. Obviously, we don't expect Mbappe to be part of it from this summer onwards, but a lot is going to change. You know, Ligue 1 at this moment in time is undergoing a massive facelift. They've announced the new logo. They've announced the new sponsor. There's no more Uber Eats. We've got McDonald's coming in on a very lucrative sponsorship deal. And there's going to be a new trophy as well. It's no longer going to be the Hexagol, which has seemed to be almost PSG's exclusive property and over the last sort of 10 years or so. So we're going to have a new look trophy as well. And obviously with Mbappe, you know, expected to move on, there's going to be the opportunity for new figureheads in the league. You know, you've got a number of already very worthy candidates in Paris. You've got the likes of Bradley Barcola, the likes of Warren Zaïre-Emery, but you've got a fantastic amount of talent just dotted across the league. At Lille, for example, where you've got Lenny Yoro, as long as he doesn't join Mbappe in Madrid, presumably, you know, that's, you know, another reason for hope. And I think as long as they do manage to sort out the TV rights situation, which has dragged on longer than expected, you know, as long as there is sort of they reach the requisite amount so that the CVC bailout deal, you know, doesn't end up being sort of a rock around their necks, so to speak, sort of dragging them down. You know, I do think that the future for French football domestically is bright, because the one thing that Ligue 1 will never be short of is talent. There's so much, you know, to be excited about right now in terms of the young players coming through.
Are you as optimistic, Andy, given that there's only one Kylian Mbappe? Whatever JJ might say about all the other talent coming out, that's what the focus is on.
Yeah, and I think it's easy to look at it from a PSG perspective. How do they replace him in terms of not just quality, but in terms of profile? But I think that matters for the league as well. And I think that's really interesting. If we go back over the QSI era of PSG from Zlatan Ibrahimovic onwards, a lot of the discussion in France is not so much what will provide competitive balance to the league, in that what will enable our league to have suitable international exposure. And, you know, I think there's been gratitude to certainly in the media to Ibrahimovic, to Neymar, to Messi, in the way that they're able to help Ligue 1 project. So as it tries to sort itself out after the disaster of really the last TV deal, I think to get the players who really capture the imagination is important. Like, it's tricky. There's no doubt about that. It's tricky. But of course, what PSG do in the transfer market this summer is actually quite important to the future profitability of Ligue 1, if we're talking about it from a profitability perspective rather than necessarily a balanced sporting competition.
But is it also not more valuable if you look at the way that French clubs are performing in Europe suddenly as well? Because part of the CVC deal that people might not be aware of, so the entry of private equity into French football, despite the fact that they're going to take a significant chunk of the future commercial revenue of French clubs, around 13%, the deal basically incentivizes French clubs to finally start performing in Europe. And you're already seeing that. You're seeing a higher number of French clubs get to the latter stage of the competitions. I mean, this is the first time in a long, long time since the very early 2000s that we see a French representative in the quarterfinals of every level of European competition in the Champions League. You've got PSG in the Europa League, you've got Marseille, and in the Europa Conference League, you've got Lille, Dotton's favourite. But I think there are lots of reasons to be optimistic that it's not necessarily just the players that will come into Ligue 1, the foreign talent. It's the domestic talent that will keep coming through in this conveyor belt that has for years, decades now, been France's real true strength. And I think that is something that maybe a wider international audience underestimates, that a lot of their favourite players have risen to prominence in Ligue 1. And it's an opportunity for them, if they take an interest in the competition, to identify that talent before anybody else does.
I'm so glad to see this question from Johanna, who asks, is there any possibility that Florian Wirtz will still be playing for Leverkusen next season? Probably less of a possibility since that 7-second goal against France, Andy, I'd have thought.
Well, maybe. I don't know. I don't think that underlined to anyone anything that they didn't really know already, because Wirtz has had an unbelievable season for Leverkusen. He's a special player, and very few players can do what he's able to do. I guess the two things I would say in terms of his future at Leverkusen, I think there's a very good chance of him still being at Leverkusen next season. Part of that is to do with the amount of money that it would take to spring him. He would not be cheap. And clearly, there are a lot of big clubs out there dealing with financial issues at the moment. I think the other thing is to say, with all the successes of Xabi Alonso's at Leverkusen this season, platforming Florian Wirtz is one of the biggest, because the freedom he gets in that team, he will get in very few other teams. So Leverkusen are very disciplined. They're very athletic, but Wirtz, the athleticism of others allows Wirtz off the chain to dribble where he wants to wander where he wants to impact the game where he best sees fit. He's almost like an editor at large, really, if you put it like in like the bracket of magazine staff, for example. You know, while you've got Xhaka subbing the copy, and Robert Andrich, for example.
I can feel this segueing into our production team and sort of their equivalents.
Look, they're all my favourites. I don't have any favourites. But I tell you what, if Xabi Alonso, if the Leverkusen players were his kids, Florian Wirtz would definitely be his favourite. I don't think there's any doubt about that. He's the little one who gets let away with everything. But, he doesn't abuse that freedom. He really makes the most of it, and has been terrific for the team this season because of that. And I guess what Nagelsmann is trying to do with the national team is replicate that kind of freedom as best as he can within like a team that has globally needed to be more solid in Germany. But I think the other thing with Wirtz, he's only 20 years old. I don't sense he's in a massive rush to go anywhere as well. I mean, he made a big decision in the first place when he was 16, 17 to move from Köln to Leverkusen because he was through the Köln Youth Academy. That's not an easy move to make. Köln fans were really not happy about that.
Just ask Patrick Helmers.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that he did that in the first place shows that he has a plan for his career. And that plan for his career was slightly set back by his ACL, which it took him quite a long time to get over, by the way. But now he's fully over it. He's playing the best football of his career. And I think probably going into the Champions League with Leverkusen before he maybe moves on at 22, 23 years old probably makes the best sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think as well, the really crucial factor in all of this could be Xabi Alonso's future, because there is an increasingly strong case for him to stay with Bayer Leverkusen beyond the end of this season. I mean, there is equally a strong case for him to move on and perhaps be unable to bet at what he's currently, well, what he looks like he's about to achieve with this Leverkusen side. But equally, you know, sort of fixing Bayern overnight doesn't seem like it's, you know, something that will be immediately easy, despite the fact that Xabi Alonso obviously is very familiar with Bayern's setup, having been a player there. You know, and following in Klopp's footsteps at Anfield, that is not going to be an easy task either. We've seen it be hugely difficult, you know, at clubs like Arsenal, also Manchester United, you know, that sort of poison chalice of being the chosen successor of somebody whose success has been so great it's almost impossible to live up to. And, you know, should some of those factors combine and push Xabi Alonso to stay to try and be more ambitious beyond this season with Leverkusen, you know, I think Wirtz would be not silly to not want to be a part of that, but I think that would appeal to him massively, you know, and I think it might arguably also be the best thing for his career as well, because despite him being such a prodigious talent at such a young age, he has also missed a you know, quite a big chunk of that nascent career as well with the injury that he suffered.
So shall we put it down to coincidence that Xabi Alonso, possibly the number one target to replace Jurgen Klopp at Liverpool, and Florian Wirtz, of very much of an interest? Well, Liverpool, one of the teams in Europe that have got their eye on him. Is that just a coincidence then?
Well, if that keeps Franquez with Lens in Ligue 1 for a bit longer, then I'd sign up for that.
This from Nicholas. I saw the Basque country played Uruguay in a non-FIFA friendly. How did this come about, and what implication could it have for the future of football in the region and Spain more broadly, Andy?
Well, the Basque country have been playing games for, like, you know, this is a decades-long tradition. The difference is this is the first international game that they'd played, of course, non-FIFA game, as you say, but international game that they'd played in around 4 years. It was significant for a couple of reasons. Firstly, the fact that it was against Uruguay, because that's Marcelo Bielsa, former Athletic coaches team as well. So it's something, a concept, the Basque national team that he's very aware of, and he thinks is important, and he understands why it's important. I guess the other interesting thing is the fact that Basque football is enjoying a real resurgence at the moment. So you've had Real Sociedad, who have been doing really brilliantly, particularly in the group stage of the Champions League. And they don't have quite the same signing policy as Athletic. And now, in case you're not aware of this, just to briefly frame it, Athletic have always said, we will only take Basque players, which is what makes their story historically even more remarkable. So you could say, in a sense, in the league, in La Liga, that they are like a Basque national team, if you like. Real Sociedad are slightly different, because they always complained, and they were not the only club to complain, but the major club to complain, that Athletic nicked all the best players from the region. So they were first to they had to cast their net further afield. So in the late 80s, they signed John Aldridge, Dalian Atkinson, Kevin Richardson. So they would sign non-Basque, non-Spaniards. So they wouldn't sign non-Basque Spaniards, but they would sign overseas players. And I've had overseas players. But that success that they've enjoyed under their coach, Imanol, is down to the fact that he was never really cut out to be a first-team coach, in his opinion. He was someone who saw himself as a developer of youth players. So what effect has him having the Real Sociedad job had permanently had on the Real Sociedad first team? It's meant that a lot more youth products have come through. So you've almost got two Basque national teams, and Athletic are doing brilliantly at the moment. You know, they're in a great position to beat Atletico Madrid to that fourth place in La Liga. So Basque football is enjoying a real revival, great prominence. Of course, the team's traded league titles if you go back to the start of the 80s. So we're not quite at that level yet. And maybe that's not even possible in modern football. But it means that discussing the Basque national team is far more of a thing. Having said that, they've applied, what, three times in the last decade for FIFA and UEFA membership, and they've not been granted it yet. Of course, while the Basque country is not independent, it's something that you feel that FIFA or UEFA will be quite reticent to do, even though I guess they would point to England, Scotland, Northern Ireland and Wales as an example of you have a country with regions that have separate international teams. And at the moment, there's no decision for those players to make because they can play games for the Basque national team and then they can go back and play for Spain while the Basque country is not FIFA UEFA affiliated. So that might be a tough decision for, say, Nico Williams, for example, going forward, or the next Nico Williams, to decide if the Basque country were to be fully independent in football terms. But in the meantime, is something that I think adds a lot to football, to international football. I think it's really great to see. And of course, we're also getting to see how Athletic like to bend the rules a little bit. I mean, you know, we talked about how they annoyed Real Sociedad by hoovering up the best talent. I mean, when they say we take only Basque players, they've bent the rules a little bit. You look at Alvaro Giallo, who's at Braga at the moment, winger, very fine player, who's joining Athletic next season. Now, he scored the goal in this one, which was his first game and his first goal for the Basque Country national team. He's eligible to play for Athletic because he was born in Madrid, but he spent a chunk of his childhood in Bilbao. So, yeah. There are loopholes to be had, let's say.
By that logic, JJ, by that logic, am I right in thinking that Antoine Griezmann could play for the Basque country?
I'm really glad you mentioned that, actually, because I was about to jump in sort of on the political element, because one of sort of the countries geographically closest to Spain that has provided a number of sort of those non-Spanish Basque players or players who are eligible to play for the Basque country. So historically, like Vicente Lizarazu and Stefan Ruffier could have played for Athletic Club had he not gone down as a Saint-Étienne legend instead, because he was born in Bayonne. Didier Deschamps himself would qualify as Basque because he is also Bayonne born, same as Aymeric Laporte, who was born in Agen, which is not far from Bayonne. So Griezmann qualifies as potentially Basque second nationality because I believe he entered Real Sociedad's academy system before the age of 17. So because his footballing development took place in that famed Sociedad youth academy that at one point also involved Imanol Alguacil, who is now the Sociedad head coach, it's created this interesting potential for Griezmann to one day play for Athletic Club, maybe, or the Basque national team. You'd imagine that would probably be quite controversial should he ever opt to do so. And funnily enough, Griezmann, who also talks glowingly about Uruguayan culture as well, to sort of try and tie a bow on all of this and make it relevant to the Uruguayan national team. Now, the only other thing that I will add to this is I find these, like, alternative national teams absolutely fascinating. And I've always hoped that at one point in France, in the future, in Ligue 1, we see one of the Corsican clubs do something similar to Athletic Club, where they sort of make themselves kind of the regional authority on the island and go for an all Corsican approach. Obviously, the talent pool would be a lot thinner than the one in the Basque country. But if that was sort of a cultural and political initiative that they put in now, I wonder sort of what that would look like and what it would do in terms of the league's image in the future and how competitive that potentially fully Corsican club team and possibly national team could be. Because they do have a national team. I think it gets together far less often than the Basque Country one, but it does still exist, and there's been a number of very interesting players who have played for that or are eligible for that over the years.
I'd like to put my name forward for UK Nigerians, a nation all on its own. But don't laugh, because we've got London Nigerians as a rugby team, or we did have. So UK Nigerians, I think I'd get a game. And that's about it from us. Thank you for listening to Ask OTC. If you would like to ask a question, you can contact us anytime at Radio Dotton, at Andy Brassel, at John_LeGossip, or at OTC Pod, and you can email us otc@footballramble.com.
On the Continent is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.